You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera here on Friday night. Now we'll go to phone lines real quick, talk to Jay Gonzalez of the Sugar Skulls, the media director. I would venture to guess that you guys are pretty excited for a big game tomorrow, Jay. Yeah?
We are. It's a huge game, and, there's a lot goes into these games because, you know, there's the rivalry, there's the coaches, there's, you know, the proximity to each other and the fact that, you know, the Rattlers are so darn good. And we're just getting started, so yeah, everybody's pretty excited, and I think it's been a pretty good week of practice.
You've been in this business a long time, especially well as a media guy and as a reporter. You know, when you had to go to baseball games, sometimes you had to go 2 or 3 hours before the game, do interviews, sit through the game, and then do interviews, and then work. It's like a 10-hour day sometimes. How early do you go to a game that starts at 6, like tomorrow?
I'll probably be there about 3 o'clock. As time has gone on this season, we've had more games. We've kind of locked down a lot of the things that we've got to do before the games. But the very first game was crazy. I was there 4 hours before the home opener, and I ran out of time doing some things. But you know, we've got a lot of things in place. There aren't as many credentials to deal with and things like that. So I'll probably be there about 3 o'clock and. Get everything done and probably spend the last hour or so, you know, just kind of taking it in, maybe throwing some stuff on social media, that type of stuff. We've gotten our preparation down pretty well, so yeah. It's not so bad anymore.
You've already seen a number of games, and you're an objective eye to a degree, even though you're with the team. You probably see that the team has gotten a lot better since day one.
They definitely have, and what I see is as the season has gone on, the coaching staff bringing in players who can do certain things that they need them to do. For you know, a great example is Jeremiah Harris, the little 5 foot something kick returner. You know, we were terrible on special teams. We weren't, you know, we were sometimes not even getting out of the end zone, and they went and got him, and all of a sudden our special teams are dangerous, or at least our kick returns. Yep. Dangerous. Mm-hmm. Plus he's added an element on offense where, you know, you get him the ball in an open space, he's hard to find. So things like that, you know, I'm not so up to speed on what makes a good offensive or defensive lineman, but you know, guys have come and gone and they filled holes, and probably over the last, I think this is the third week now where the roster has been pretty stable. We've got one new defensive back in this week, but we were one short on the roster, so you know nobody got released to bring him in. But you can tell that the coaching staff sees guys, knows where certain guys are and what certain guys can do, and they bring them in. And so I've seen them plug a lot of holes.
You're on a 3-game streak, right? Is that correct?
That's 3 games. You know, we've beaten San Diego twice and Bismarck once, and you know, they're at the bottom of the league, you know, understandably, you know, we have to temper our enthusiasm about that. But the fact of the matter is we did win those 3 games. We were supposed to win the 3 games. We did win the 3 games. And by doing that, we're in a really good position to get in the playoffs.
In the best case scenario, you could finish as high as 4th?
I think we can. I think it's relatively unlikely. Green Bay, who we're tied with right now, doesn't really have a very tough schedule. If you look at those are three games that they should win. And at worst, go 2-1. That would mean for us to stay tied with them, we'd have to beat the Rattlers once or twice, or beat the Rattlers once and beat Quad Cities. So, the real look at that is that, you know, we're 4th place is going to be tough for us to get into, but it could happen because anything can happen. But you know, 5th and 6th place, just get in a playoff spot. You know, we're in good shape. So, would love to host a home playoff game, which means we'd have to get into 4th place. But let's say we do, then it comes to some mathematical formula that's related to how good are the teams that you've played. not, you know, the tiebreaker that would come into play, since we don't play Green Bay, would be the winning percentage of our opponents. People say, well, you played San Diego four times and they've won one game. Well, we've also played we're going to have played the Rattlers four times. They haven't lost any games. So it's mathematically possible for us to finish in fourth place, and that would be great for us. We'd love to have a home game here in Tucson.
Right, right. So tell me, you have three or two left. So when would that happen? When would the playoff first game, if that did happen?
The playoffs will start the week after the regular season ends. So it'd be the weekend of the 22nd.
Wow.
So the first and second place teams get a bye. So there's six teams, so they get a first-round bye. So the third seed plays the sixth seed, and the fourth seed plays the fifth seed. Would certainly like to, you know, be in that 4-5 slot, because there's a gap. You've got first, second, and third, and then there's a gap to the fourth-place team. So it would be a big advantage on our part to at least get into the fifth-place spot, if not the fourth-place spot.
Right, right. He's done it unconventionally, and maybe that's not the right word because I'm not too familiar with indoor football, but with the two-quarterback system, with a group of players that, like you talked about, the roster has kind of been a flux a lot being the first year. But do you agree with me or no? Is that standard?
It seems to me that's standard. Now, the whole two-quarterback thing, I think we were fortunate to have two quarterbacks who can play, because not everybody has that. You know, you see a guy like in Nebraska, you see Tommy Armstrong, who plays all their plays. The guy from Nebraska. You know, we're just fortunate that we've got two guys that are capable in this league. And, you know, last week was a perfect example of what can happen when you have two guys. Jake Medlock takes a hit, fumbles the ball. It's a key, you know, it's a key play in the game. We fall behind, and we bring in, you know, we go to the bullpen, and we bring in the right-hander, and we win the game. So it's just, we're in a good spot because of that. And the thing about these two guys, while they're extremely competitive, they're also extremely supportive, and they want the team to win. You know, Jake is a really, really fiery guy. And I mean that in a good way. He wants to win, and he wants to win bad. And, you know, when he does something wrong, he's mad at himself. He's not mad at the team or anybody else. And, you know, he takes that responsibility. Matt, I see him as kind of more of a laid-back guy, but no less competitive. And he comes in and he wants to win. And these two guys are just great as far as that goes. They complement each other really, really well.
Right. No, and at the end of the day, you love that competition, and it makes you better, and it makes the team better.
Well, sure. You know that neither one of those guys is going to slack off in practice, because they know if they do, they're not going to be on the field. And it's the same way across the board on our team. I mean, there have been some guys that have come and gone, and I thought we're doing great. And then, they get released, and you go, okay. So there was something that our coaches saw that said that guy wasn't getting the job done. And that's what it is. And, you know, the thing that I do really sense from our coaches is that, you know, when they make a personnel decision, it's about guys that help us win. It's not about personalities. It's not about, you know, somebody who's, you know, doing something in the locker room. It's about guys who can play or can't play. And maybe this guy can play, but they find a guy who can play a little better and help us out a little more.
You've been in your role now for, what, 6-7 months or whatever it is, and you've covered a lot of games and teams throughout the years. Did anything surprise you while you're kind of in the inside now of a pro team? I'm talking just maybe athletics or behind-the-scenes stuff that you probably weren't expecting, but that's kind of common now?
Not really. You know, I mean, I've been, you know, in some locker rooms as a reporter, not really as a guy who's part of the locker room. You know, I get to go in, I go into the locker room at the end of a game, and I hear the coach give his speech,
right,
and those kinds of things. So I can't say that I've been surprised by anything. I mean, I played some high school sports, so, you know, I've been in locker rooms as a player as well. And I've been a high school coach, and I've been the guy giving the speeches. So I'm going to say that nothing really surprises me. Getting back to the whole personnel issue, was understanding the business piece of it, that it is a business and that guys come and go, and sometimes you don't really know why, but they do. And then also to see the understanding the guys have that it is a business. You know, guys, they leave, and some of these guys who have been released by our team, they're still in town, and they're going to the games because they still care about the team. And I think that's really cool. So I wouldn't say I'm surprised by all that, but I wasn't sure how some of that stuff would look, being on this side of it.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I want to. I have with 6:15 a few moments now. I want to have some fun with you here. I had Greg Hansen here earlier a couple of days ago, I think it was, and you know how the show is. It's kind of reminiscing about the good old days. And you were a reporter for the Daily Star in the mid '80s, I think.
Correct. I was a news reporter, but I was a sports writer from '85 to '90.
Yep. Yeah. How were those years of covering the basketball team? And we talked a little about it last week, but the years you covered the basketball team in the late '80s, at the time, I think, when it was kind of the start building into what it became.
I think that the big thing, and you know, we talked about this the other day, was the access that you had to the players. And by having that access, you really were able to let the community know, you know, let the fans know who these guys were and what they were about. And I think doing that, and particularly, you know, the 2 years that I covered men's basketball as the beat writer in the 86-87 season, which was the year Steve Kerr sat out as a recovering from his knee injury, and then the 87-88 season, the final 4 year that, even though they didn't win a national championship, I think there's a lot of people in this town who have been around since then who still believe that was the greatest year of college basketball in this town. I think that a lot of what happened with the team in terms of people just embracing them was the fact that we as reporters, and you know, you were one of them, we had access. And we were able to tell these guys stories and tell them in depth.
Right.
I think it did lead. It ultimately led to too much access because there were all of a sudden too many people hanging around and for all the wrong reasons. And you know, they had to kind of shut it down. But I think when we had that access in the late '80s, it gave us an opportunity to tell these guys stories, whether it's football, basketball, whatever. And people got to know the players, and that's how this connection, you know, was forged. You know, with the players, particularly the basketball team.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I totally agree with you because you kind of always remember your first time, and '88 was that first time when they got to the Final Four. You had characters like Sean Elliott and Steve Kerr, like you said, and Craig McMillan, Kenny Lofton, Harvey Mason, Muehlbach, good guys who you wanted to love and wanted to follow because they were good guys until they broke your heart in the Final Four.
Yeah, but absolutely, they were good guys. And you know, the funny thing was that because of the access we had, we were able to see that they were regular guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we traveled with them. We were on the same airplanes with them. I remember there was a game in the 87-88 season. It was actually in December of 87. When Arizona went back to Iowa for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Arizona was in the top five. Iowa was in the top five. My hotel room was on the same floor as the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
So after the game, those guys are in the hallways, and they're hooting and hollering, and they're happy, and they won the game, and they're running in and out of the hotel rooms. And I walk out into the hallway, and there's Sean Elliott and, you know, and Anthony Cook running around in a towel and Steve Kerr laying on a bed. We saw that. And it made you realize these guys, in the end, were just college students having a good time.
Right, right.
And we got to see that.
I was going to kind of reminisce. It was my understanding in the stories I've done in the past with Luke that may have been the most nervous he's had ever been at a regular season college game, going back home in a place where he helped build it like he did here, and it was like he couldn't lose that game.
Yeah, that you could tell that week. There was a lot of pressure on it. And the funny thing about that was that, in particular, Steve Kerr and Tom Tolbert, I recall this like yesterday, right? Kerr and Tolbert that week were about as goofy as they were the entire season. You could tell that they took it upon themselves to kind of loosen things up, probably because they felt that their coach was so wound up about that game. And it was great you had guys like that. That's, you know, again, that's what made that team so special. They had guys who were grown-ups, first of all. I mean, Tolbert was like 28 by that time. I don't know how old that guy was. But, you know, they had guys that, you know, that were grown-up. You know, Joe Turner was another guy who had been around a long time that year. And they could just, you know, do things that, you know, your one-and-done guys have no idea what to do. And that was one of the team things that made that team so special.
Let me say, you were there in '88 when they beat Stanford. I think they became number one, correct?
Right.
For the
right.
first time, for the first
they,
time
they,
ever.
They were number one. Right. They had beaten we were on the road at Washington, and it was a weird thing because the Pac-10 tournament at that time, because of the way the calendar fell, they had to play a series before the new year. So we were at Washington and then Washington State on a Saturday-Monday series. So they had beaten Washington on Saturday, and on that Monday afternoon, the new poll came out, and they were number one for the first time.
Right, right.
And then they won the Fiesta Bowl tournament, and that was the year that they beat Duke and Michigan State in the Fiesta Bowl tournament. And they were undefeated, and then the day after New Year's went to New Mexico and got beat.
Right, right. How was that? How was that little run where they became number one for the first time? I know the city kind of went bonkers as usual, and then they go to my place to play New Mexico, and they get beat, which was kind of crazy because for some odd reason, the Lobos always had their number for whatever reason.
Well, first of all, I find it interesting that you call it my place. I mean, I know you went to school there, but
I
think it's interesting that in that moment, it's my place.
No. Anyway. In fact, I was more considering my area of where I lived because I'm not a Lobo. I'm not a Lobo. I'm an Aggie.
But you know, here's the funny thing about that is that when I walked into the arena, and back then, we didn't need to be there much more an hour before game time. But I walked in, and you could feel the buzz.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You could feel the buzz in that arena. And, you know, I mean, it held 18 and change or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had never been to that. I had never been there. I had heard about it. You know, I grew up during the WAC days, and we heard about Arizona going to play at New Mexico and the pit and how awful that was. But I do remember walking in there and thinking, there's a buzz, and thinking, you know, they're going to have to play a really good game or they're going to lose. And they didn't play a very good game and they lost.
Right, right. No, it's a heck of a tough place to play, especially for big games. You know, they don't get up for, you know, bad games or easy games, but they always got up for these type of games. And like I say, I'm not a Lobo, so I kind of knew the history of them because I was with the Aggies.
Right.
Do you have time to spend like another 10, 15 minutes after we take a break?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah, I want to talk about the Bobby Knight incident. I think that's one of the best stories I have ever heard because it was down here and it happened at McHale Center.
Yeah, it happened here.
Yeah, yeah. So let's take.
I'll be happy to tell you the story.
Yeah, let's go to break here with Tom and come back and have a funny story told to us by Jay here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera here on AM 1030 The Voice, and I'm on the phone now with Jay Gonzalez, media director of the Tucson Sugar Skulls. Big game tomorrow with the Arizona Rattlers. But we've kind of moved along from that. We've been talking about local sports here at U of A and otherwise. We have a few more minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes. But I also wanted to give you guys a quick score. Arizona, and it's final now. Arizona wins 5-2. So they're one game up on Ole Miss with game two tomorrow. So that's some good news for locals. Should be fun. So Jay, are you in a capacity of working for the Star at the time this happens, or are you kind of just there as an observer?
No. I had left the basketball beat, and I was the backup guy, but because I was covering football at the time. It was the 88-89 basketball season, so I covered the 88 football team. And when you're the beat writer on football, you're the backup guy on basketball, meaning you got to go at home games, you go cover the other locker rooms and stuff like that. So I was the backup guy, which in that season, which meant that we had an NCAA tournament here, first and second round here, and that was Arizona hosted in 87. 86, 87 was Sean Elliott's sophomore year. And Arizona hosted and played in Tucson. Remember, they lost an overtime game to UTEP.
UTEP, right.
And that was the last year that the NCAA allowed schools to host and play at their site. They changed the rule after that year. Well, Arizona had already committed to hosting in the 88-89 season, so they hosted, and our beat writers at the time that year was Michael Downs, who had covered it for 1 year, and he and Greg Hansen were off to follow the U of A who were in the West Regional, but they were in the other West Region site for the first and second round. So I became the writer for, you know, the lead writer to cover the tournament here, which meant I had to cover every game, which was crazy, but it was. And you know, you wanted to hear the story about Bob Knight. Well, what happened was Indiana got sent down here, and there was a lot of controversy over the pick because I believe what happened was Indiana and Illinois, I think, tied for the Big Ten championship, and the NCAA committee made Illinois a one seed and made Indiana a two seed, maybe a three seed, I can't remember, but a lower seed, and shipped them to Tucson. And first of all, if you recall, there was, I don't know that anybody ever proved it, but there was always a feeling that Lute and Bob Knight didn't like each other, right? So here comes Bob Knight. He didn't get the seed that he thought he deserved, and B, he gets sent to Lute's house. And so apparently he wasn't very happy. The problem that was that nobody knew for sure that he wasn't very happy because he didn't talk to the media all week. He wouldn't do interviews. Even the NCAA mandated interviews, he wouldn't do them. I ended up having to do a preview of Indiana. I ended up having to do a story on Steve Alford, who was his point guard on that team. Anyways, or maybe not his point guard. I can't remember. But I didn't get to interview Coach Knight. So they show up, and they win their first game. And Bob Young, who was a reporter at the Republic, he covered the U of A for the Republic. He and I had become very fast friends when we were both beat writers covering basketball. He had written a story that basically said that Bob Knight wasn't happy being sent to Tucson. So they win their game, and they're going to play UTEP and Don Haskins in the second round. And in the day between, there were press conferences not open to the public. And so Coach Knight walks in to do his interview, and he's got a newspaper in his hand, and he sits down at the podium, and they always let the coaches make their comments. So he said, "Before I say anything about the game tomorrow, I want to know if Bob Young is here." And Bob was sitting next to me, and we were like in the second row, away from the podium, and Bob raises his hand, and Coach Knight just, you know, really loud says, "I want to know where you got all this information that I wasn't happy to be sent here. You never talked to me. How do you know this?" And Bob said, "Well, I talked to other people about you." "Well, next time you're going to write a story like that, make sure you talk to me." And Bob said, "Well, you know, you didn't make yourself available." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, you know, if I don't talk to you, you don't write stories about me," or something like that.
Yeah.
It was something like
that. In front of everybody.
It was part of the press conference. So, you know, the national media is there. CBS was there. Everybody was there. So he says, "Okay, I'll just take some questions." So I raise my hand, and being the type of person I am, and people know this about me, I said, "Well, Coach, my question is, why are you so worried about what was in the newspaper 2 days ago when you've got an NCAA tournament game to play tomorrow?" And he went ballistic. And we kind of went back and forth. He said, "Well, you guys are just always asking me crap questions." He was cussing and all kinds of things. And, I can't stand the media. You guys are always trying to make me look bad and this and that and the other. And I said, well, Coach, and I don't know why I was trying to cure him of this. But I said, "Well, Coach, you know, would be a lot nicer to you if you answered our questions." "Well, you guys ask nothing but stupid questions." And I said, "Well, you know, you think they're stupid. I don't think, you know, we don't think they're stupid. They're questions that we need answered." And this thing went back and forth.
Sure.
And the last thing he said to me was, "Well, I'll tell you what. If you don't ask me any more questions, I won't give you any more. If you don't ask me any more stupid questions, I won't give you any more stupid answers." And that was it. And then the press conference went on. I said, "Well." That made its way onto a pregame show for CBS and the whole bit. And, so I'm still covering the thing. They win their game. And so I'm at the press conference the next day. I asked a couple of questions. He answered the questions and the whole bit. Well, the press conference ends. So this was after they've won. So they're moving on to the Sweet 16. And the press conference ends, and I stand up to walk out, and I feel this hand on the back of my neck. And I turn around, and it's a guy who looks like a bodyguard. And he's maybe he was their trainer or something like that. He was probably about a late 40s guy, bald, husky. I mean, you know, it looked like a guy who could snap me in half in 2 seconds. And he says in a really deep voice, "Coach Knight wants to talk to you." And I'm like, uh-oh, you know, here we go. And he takes me out this side door, and this is Emma Kale.
Yeah.
Takes me out this side door, and we're in a stairwell, and Coach Knight is standing there, and I'm like, are these two guys going to beat me up? I mean, what the heck's going to happen here? And then Coach Knight gets this little smile on his face, and he goes, you know, I don't like the media. I said, yeah, Coach, I can tell. He goes, well, look. So I just want to let you know, it's nothing personal. I mean, he went on this whole thing about, you know, he's Mr. Nice Guy.
Right.
Nothing personal. I don't want you to think, you know, I don't want you to hate me, you know. I just didn't like what was being written about me this week, and I got a little mad. I'm sorry I took it out. He didn't say sorry. He never said sorry. He says, something like, I shouldn't have taken it out on you, and I know you're just trying to do your job, but I'm trying to do my job, and the meat is a pain in my back and in my neck, and I just want to let, you know. And we shook hands and walked out.
And there was that.
That was that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then subsequently, a year or two later, he was cracking the whip with Chaney and doing, you know, he was doing the same thing later, doing the same stuff.
Right.
He was Bobby Knight.
Right. Well, there's an epilogue to that story because I know, looking at the clock here, but there's an epilogue to that story. I don't know how many years later, it's when he was at Texas Tech, and they get sent down to Tucson for a first and second round.
Okay.
And at this time, I had been asked to be the press conference moderator.
Oh, yes.
So now I'm going to be sitting next to him. So so I can't remember who passed the story around about my thing with Knight in 89. And I mean, this could have been, well, how many years later was that? That could have been 10 years later. There were still some guys around who remembered that. And a lot of the writers were thinking, this is going to be fun because if Coach Knight recognizes him, there's going to be a fist fight up on the podium and this is going to be great. And obviously nothing happened, you know, and whether he recognized me or not, he never said anything to me about that. But I sat next to him up on the podium for first and second round.
And you never brought it up to him?
I never brought it up to him. He never brought it up to me. And I don't think anybody else brought it up to him. But I do remember there were writers who had been around at that time who were still around, like Greg Hansen, and I think Jack Magruder was there and stuff like that. But they were just hoping something was going to happen. Nothing ever happened.
Right. Okay, so I did talk to Greg earlier this week, and we had a good rapport talking about the same things we're talking about now. So we had our list of top players here all time, and you grew up here, so you've seen more teams than we both have. But we showed up in the late, mid-80s, something like that. Who was, outside of Sean, I think that we've all can say that Sean Elliott is the number one player. Who was your number two, all-time best player?
All-time number two. And now, are we talking guys, you know, even up to now?
Yes.
Oh, God.
He and I agreed on number two.
But I certainly think that, DeAndre Ayton has to be in the conversation because that guy could just do things to people that you just didn't see other guys do. Mike Bibby's in the conversation for me because, you know, the things he did as a freshman. I think there's a guy that people forget and, a couple of guys, now I'm dating myself, right? I don't think there's ever been a better shooter than Coneil Norman.
Yeah, see, I talked to him about that. I asked him about that. In fact, I'm trying to get him on the show, but I've heard that, but he didn't say that. He didn't put him on that list, but I get it.
You know, I mean, Kerr, obviously, Steve, you know, with the three-point shot and stuff like that, I'd love to see a shooting contest between Coneil Norman and Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm.
Two point guards that people forget about that were great. When they talk about, Mike Bibby and Damon Stoudemire and, you know, point guard Russell Brown.
Russell Brown, I mentioned him, yes.
And Eric Money.
Yeah. So the problem that everyone had, or he and I had, and we always have these discussions with other people, but either that one-year guy, because it's just a one-year deal,
right.
Aaron Gordon, that might have to be another category, right. Lowry Marketing. But our number two, and he and I agreed on it real quick, and I don't know if you want to agree, but Damon Stoudemire.
If you want, what I was thinking was that just the bet, you know, most talented player. I get it. DeAndre had 1 year. Now, if you're talking about a guy who came to the program and was here for a long time and meant a lot of things to the program for a long period of time, more than the 1 year, certainly Damon's, you know, in that conversation. I think that, you know, because he was here all 4 years and, you know, got him to a Final Four. I'll tell you what, if you ask me though, those two guys, Khalid Reeves.
No.
Right there in terms of just his, now, did he do as much as you hoped he was going to do at Arizona? No. But in terms of just flat out talent as a basketball player, Khalid was a guy that you thought he could score whenever he wanted to.
Yeah.
There, unfortunately, were just some times that his heart wasn't into to score.
Yeah,
you know,
no question, Damon.
I mean, I could go on and on forever on some of these guys.
Damon, Damon said that if he had if Khalid had Damon's will, he would have been unbelievable.
Exactly, because Khalid could get the ball and you'd go, "Who's going to stop that guy?"
Who can forget the game against Michigan?
Right. I mean, it's really hard. And like I said, if you're going to take more than just flat talent, like a guy like DeAndre Ayton had, you know, who could just dominate somebody.
So let me throw this at you.
If you say most important player over, you know, not now, you know, somebody like DeAndre Ayton or Aaron Gordon or even Mike Bibby's not in the conversation because Bibby was only here 2 years.
Right. But you use it qualifying with the most important, Bibby right up there. And he was on our list because of what he meant to that that team for those 2 years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, people forget that team that won the national championship was Lute's worst team since his first year.
Right.
They finished fifth in the league.
Right.
But somehow they got a 4 seed and then they went on that run. And it was all because of Mike Bibby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Miles Simon was a good, talented player with a weird shot. But who ever thought that inside, you know, those guys, you know, why can't I even think of their names?
Bramlett.
AJ Bramlett.
Donnell Harris.
But the other guy who could jump out of the gym.
Donald Harris. Bennett Davidson.
Bennett Davidson. That Bennett Davidson, who couldn't shoot from outside of 3 feet, and A.J. Bramlett, who I could jump almost as high as he could, were going to get them to the promised land.
No
way. I actually said those words to some people. I said, guys, A.J. Bramlett's not going to get us there. He's not. We got to be better inside. Then they went off and won the national championship.
Right. So there was another thing I wanted to ask you. I can't remember. This conversation might have to continue in June.
Absolutely. I love talking this stuff all day. You know, it's been a big part of, you know, my being. I mean, I grew up here, so, you know, having had the chance to see all that stuff and continue to see it, you know, I continue to be a part of the program as their stat guy for going on 30 years. I've seen a lot of guys come through, and it's been fun.
This is now, by you saying that, recall this one thing. So you've been on the stat line for a long time, and I know you must have heard some crazy stuff on the sideline by opponent coaches, even having conversation with coaches. Could you give me a story or two if that's true? That's allowable.
Yeah, well,
that's allowable
I've
for the radio.
I've got some that might get some coaches in trouble. Okay, but I know it'll get us in trouble too. I probably shouldn't tell. I'll just say, look. Here's one of the funny things we used to do. We used to count when Kevin O'Neill first at Marquette, then at USC. We used to count how many F-bombs we would hear from him in a game. We'd have an over under. You know, not for money or anything, just an over under. And there was one game that he came, I think he was with USC at that time, and we said 20 for the game. And literally, one guy would sit there with a piece of paper, and he would mark, you know, a notch every time he had 18 before halftime. something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you see, you know, we saw guys, coaches get kicked out of games for almost nothing. Then other coaches commit a crime and not get kicked out. George Raveling called a referee 6 different cuss words in one sentence as he ran by and didn't get thrown out of a game. And then we saw another coach from, you know, a hyphenated school get a technical for just, you know, having a question about a call. It's, you know, the things that we've seen. Okay, I've always wanted to throw this one out publicly, okay? Aside of Kevin O'Neill, you know, people have always asked me, who had the foulest mouth that you heard of an opposing coach? And people would be surprised if I tell them it was Mike Krzyzewski.
Oh, there's no, yeah. I was going to take a guess at that.
Yeah, Mike Krzyzewski. That guy, and he doesn't say it loud, and he doesn't say it to the fans, but you hear it.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he gets mad, and he can, you know, it's one F-bomb after another out of that guy.
Yeah.
And I you know, Kevin passed him. But, you know, we knew that about Kevin when he was an assistant coach in Arizona. You know, he was an assistant on that 88, on the 87 and 88 teams that I covered. But some of the conversations that we had, you know, back then, you know, you knew that he was that guy.
Right.
But, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, George Raveling was another one. There was a time that the guy from Utah, heavyset guy who passed away.
Oh, yeah. Majerus.
Rick Majerus. He kicked the table so hard, my laptop actually got, you know, my stat laptop actually got air. It literally got, he kicked it so hard, everything on the table popped up in the air and came back down. You know, our water bottles and the computers and people's notes, he kicked it so hard in a game.
Yeah,
you know that happened.
And
he was
a colorful guy too. He'd lay some language on you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, and we've heard, you know, we've heard coaches have conversations with fans. Ernie Kent was great. Ernie Kent would come and he'd chit chat with the fans, and the guys that sit behind us loved him, and they would talk to him, and you know, things like that. So, you know, they're coaches that we enjoy coming here. You know, there's some coaches that we thought, guy, you got to settle down. You're going to have a heart attack. There was a coach from Texas A&M, Tony Barone.
Oh, yes.
And do you remember him?
Very much so. And he looked like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, and his tie looked like it was tied so tight. And he got so mad in the game. His face was beet red. We thought, he's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, he's literally going to have a heart attack right now. And we're going to see it. And, you know, things like that had been, you know, a lot of fun.
Right. We got to do this again in June, probably, when there's nothing to talk about but this.
Absolutely. Okay. I love talking about this.
Okay,
stuff.
Well, good luck tomorrow.
Like I said, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, good luck tomorrow, and we'll see you. I'm not sure if I'm covering the game, but good luck.
One quick note, Steve. I don't know if you got time.
Yeah, sure.
Quad Cities is down 10 right now to Nebraska. If they lose and we win tomorrow, we're in the playoffs.
Already, with a couple of games left. Yeah.
Yeah, because we'll be 3 games ahead of them, and so the worst we could drop to would be 6th place.
Oh, great. Well, that's a good sign for you guys right now.
All righty, man.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay.
Steve, thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. That was Jay Gonzalez, a PR or media director for the Tucson Sugar Skulls, the big game tomorrow with the Arizona Rattlers. Good to kind of reminisce. Obviously, people who listen to the show know that I like to talk about the past and those great things that we used to see, and now we could talk about it many more years later. Tom, let's take our last break here at 6:47. I know we're way late, but that's okay. 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30, The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and it looks like the Wildcats did, in fact, play that game well tonight against Ole Miss. They won 5-2. McClellan gave up 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned run. Had 9 Ks, did very well. I guess she was struggling a little in the beginning, gave up a couple runs early, and then settled in and did very well. So that's good for them. They just need one more win to get to the College World Series for the first time in since 2010, almost 9 years.
Apparently, Mississippi did not bring their ace pitcher on
today
for this game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Don't know why, but.
Yeah,
we may
be
looking at her tomorrow.
They might have, just maybe a reason for that. We'll see. Tomorrow should be a good weekend of softball if they can pull it off tomorrow, there won't be a weekend. There'll just be a day off on Sunday as they prepare to get to Oklahoma City at the end of the week. This funny thing, I've been to three or four of the ones games in Oklahoma City, and it comes at a time when the weather is absolutely miserable and scary, in fact, because of the tornadoes. There were a time or two when the rain kept the delays for a day or two, and then the tornadoes were unbelievable.
Scary. Well, how about the weather that part of the country is having right now?
That's my point. It always happened at this time of year. And it's not, you know, and for a kid that grew up in the Southwest, I'm not used to those things. So it was kind of weird being there when all those things were going on. This was in the early 90s when Arizona won their first title. Back in the early 90s. But, you know, I guess Malia Martinez had three runs driven in.
How about that?
Palomino had a couple of key hits, obviously. And the other groups, they had 12 hits total. 12 hits total and kind of, I don't want to say dominated in the back end of the game. But they
scored when they needed to.
They scored when they needed
no
to.
No home runs.
No.
Maybe they're saving those for tomorrow.
Yes, sure. Sure, that's what they do.
Of course.
Ole Miss had three errors. I'm sure that helped. Anytime you have an error, those get those people on foolishly, it always hurts. It just always does. It always comes back to bite you. Did you listen to me and Jay, right? You didn't fall asleep or leave the room, did you?
No, I was busy doing some...
repair work? And the
House cleaning. No repair stuff, just things that needed to be done.
Oh, okay.
I could do them.
Did you cook me dinner while we were there? No.
No corn dogs.
No corn dogs. Hey, I was going to ask you,
but I was listening, yes.
Did you find any of the stories interesting?
Oh, yeah.
The Bobby Knight stuff.
I hadn't heard that story before, and that's pretty wild.
That's just
Bobby,
who he is.
Yeah, Bobby Knight was a character.
Yeah, and still is. I mean, he's older now, and he's been let go by ESPN, but he always had that cranky attitude. And I'm, you know, the one thing I need to go do is rent or see the 30 on 30 Bobby Knight story, because obviously he is who he is and he wasn't going to change. But I was there in Albuquerque when he brought out the whip for Chaney, and it created a lot of problems back then. And I knew his point. He was not being racist or anything like that. He was just kind of jokingly saying, this is how I control my guys. And it was just one of those things that the media
and I guess
sometimes blows up.
His relationships with some of the referees was pretty legendary.
Very, very, no question. You know, intimidation, kind of like with the people, regular people. If he could intimidate you, he could. But back in Albuquerque, he loved the area because one of his hobbies was fishing. And he loved the area because he loved to go fishing there. And he would rather go fishing than play basketball, actually, coach at basketball in March, especially the weather was very good. But good things for the you were going to talk baseball. I don't think baseball's started yet, or maybe it has in the Palouse. We'll check that for you. But yesterday was an easy game for them. We kind of suspect all games up in the Palouse are going to be easy, as Arizona hopes to maybe find a way to get into the NCAA tournament here next week. The regular season ends this weekend, so we'll see. We'll try to see if there's a schedule or a score about the Arizona baseball as we kind of end the day.
They did well yesterday.
They won 21-0.
And the weather's looking like, here's a picture, the weather looks pretty nice yesterday up in...
Pullman.
Pullman.
Yeah, it's pretty country when you're in good weather. Other than that, I've never really been there when it's not snowing. So, and I'm not a snow guy. I don't like snow. Just don't like it. So we'll see if they can pull this off, maybe get in, sneak into the NCAA tournament, because they're really playing well. Again, I'm saying they're playing well against not-so-good teams. That happens a lot when you don't face tough competition. So
they've got, what, eight wins in a row so far?
I'm not too sure what the number is, but they've won like, you know, 17 of 18, 17 of 19, whatever it was. I'm sure the thing there stands. But their RPI, I'm not sure is that good. They were like in the projections, one of four or five teams, the last team out earlier this week. So we'll see if they get in. We'll see what they get in. But in the meantime, there's softball, one more win, and they're good. I want to try to get, you know what I want to try to get next week, if it's possible, is the women's golf coach at U of A, Ionello. Very fun with her the first time she was on the show. A lot of laughing, a lot of great philosophy from her, in terms of how she coaches her women. and the things that she looks out for, because it's not just about golf, it's about life and relationships you have with them, and actually the relationships the girls have or the women have with their boyfriends. You never know what's going to happen attitude wise or enthusiasm wise to become the golfer that she needs them to become. But a good group of women, heck, they went to the Final Four, what, I guess it was Wednesday to Tuesday, and it's already Friday when they had a chance to repeat as champions.
In the golf tournament.
Or as they say, with a small clap, the clap, golf clap. What do you plan this weekend? Well, I need to tell listeners, we're going to be off on Monday, so they're going to get actually my interview with Greg Hansen and who was that day? I can't remember who else was that day. I know it was a good show. You might remember.
What day?
Tuesday. It was a Greg Hansen stuff, the repeat they're doing for me on Monday. It was Greg, and it was somebody else the first half of the hour.
I could research it for you.
No, it's fine. But we're not going to be here live, so no. I get a day off from here.
So in Pullman, top of the fourth, Arizona 2, Washington State 1.
Oh, okay. You found it. Oh, I see it. It's right there. Cool. So if they continue to win, that'd be great. And they can't afford to lose, that's for darn sure.
No.
If they lose, they're done.
Right.
Yeah.
No, they're on the bubble as far as getting into the baseball tournament, but we'll see.
Right. I talked about this all this week too, a time or two. How contradictory of that. That the minor sports have done very, very good or well this school year, while the major flagship sports like football and men's basketball did not. So I guess there is good news at U of A athletics, because the minor sports, especially the women, did really well, with the women's basketball team doing what they did, the golf team doing what it did. And there you have it. I guess we're running out of time here, Tom. Let's call
it a day. We are fast running out of time, as a matter of fact.
I'm glad you put up the clock, because I didn't realize we were that late. Here, let's call it a week here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Thanks for listening to me this week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Yeah, and happy Memorial Day weekend.
Yes, be safe.